Today is Monday, July 27th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, more violent clashes in American cities as protesters continue demanding racial justice.
They're not really listening to our voices, especially black voices that have been wanting justice ever since the beginning of time. But now we're saying enough is enough. We want change, we want justice, and that's what we're doing tonight and forevermore.
Rising cases of coronavirus continue across the U.S. and the world. Also ahead, Taylor Swift's Folklore exceeds 1.3 million in sales globally in 24 hours. It's all on today's International Edition. With more than 4 million confirmed cases of COVID-19 across the U.S., many states are pausing their reopening efforts, leaving those who remain unemployed unsure about their future. Senate Republicans plan to introduce another coronavirus relief bill this week. VOA's Esha Sarai has more.
Confirmed cases of the novel coronavirus are surging across the United States, particularly in the Southeast.
We're finding more cases because we're testing more. But indeed, what we need to do is make sure that we focus on those nursing homes, long-term care, so that we can bring that death count down because those are the ones that are most at risk.
Health experts say increased testing is just one factor in the number of new infections. And officials in many states have criticized the overall federal response to the virus.
We are at the mercy of what's going on around the country. No national strategy, no public health investment. It's a hoax. It is the worst abdication of a national response and responsibility to protect Americans I've ever seen in my government career.
As many states pause reopening plans, grappling with new spikes in virus cases, the roughly 11% of Americans who are unemployed worry that a new coronavirus relief package will not be passed in time for them to pay their bills. Republicans in the Senate are slated to unveil the new plan this week, but tough negotiations lie ahead with Democrats.
We are going to be prepared on Monday to provide unemployment insurance extension that would be 70% of whatever the wages you were prior to being unemployed, that it would reimburse you for up to 70% of those wages, hopefully as a way to get people back on their feet.
The current $600 per week benefit is expiring at the end of the week, and the new Republican proposal will sharply reduce the total amount. Democratic leaders have pushed for maintaining the $600 weekly benefit. Esha Sarai, VOA News, Washington.
Hurricane Hannah came ashore battering the Texas Gulf Coast Sunday with high winds and drenching rains that destroyed boats, flooded streets, and knocked out power across a region already reeling from a surge in coronavirus cases. It was downgraded to a still powerful tropical storm as Hannah passed over the U.S.-Mexico border, where community health care systems were already strained by COVID-19 cases. The UN Refugee Agency reports that some states are using the COVID-19 pandemic to unlawfully detain refugees and asylum seekers. The agency is calling for their immediate release. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Some countries are reportedly using the coronavirus pandemic as an excuse to lock up refugees and asylum seekers for longer periods of time. The UN agency says refugees are fleeing war and persecution. It says they are not criminals and should not be detained without due legal process. The agency says refugees and asylum seekers often are forced to live in overcrowded and unsanitary conditions. It says social distancing in these settings is impossible and access to medical care and clean water is limited. UNHCR spokesman Charlie Yaxley tells VOA, "The risk of a catastrophic outbreak of COVID-19 in one of these detention centers is great and could jeopardize public health."
Should somebody become infected with the virus, it could potentially spread quickly amongst the other detainees, but also amongst those who work and guard the centers themselves, and therefore potentially risking further spread even outside the centers.
The UNHCR says unlawful detention of refugees is not restricted to countries in conflict, such as Libya. It says it also is widely used as an administrative procedure in all regions in Europe, Africa, Asia, and the Americas. Yaxley says the detention of refugees should be a measure of last resort, adding that children should never be held in immigration detention. He says this can never be considered to be in the child's best interest. The UNHCR, he says, is calling for the immediate release of all children from detention, as well as for refugees and asylum seekers being arbitrarily or unlawfully detained.
You know, we believe that releasing asylum seekers from detention is in the public health interest, not only of the United States, but for all countries. The detention of adults should only take place in exceptional circumstances, and the detention of children, irrespective of their immigration status, should never happen at all.
The UNHCR urges governments to expand and implement community-based alternatives to detention, including other options for newly arriving refugees and asylum seekers. It says detention center conditions should be improved while alternatives are being prepared. It adds the UNHCR should continue to have access to asylum seekers and refugees held in these locations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
State media reported Sunday that North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has placed the city of Kaesong near the border with South Korea under total lockdown after a person was found there with suspected COVID-19 symptoms. VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul.
North Korea says its first suspected coronavirus case was of a runaway who had left for South Korea 3 years ago. State media say the alleged defector returned to North Korea on July 19th after illegally crossing the demarcation line that separates the two Koreas. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has declared a state of emergency and blocked off the border area where the case was reported. North Korea had long insisted it was coronavirus-free, even though a wide range of outside experts said that was practically impossible. The country shares a long border with China, where the virus originated. Although North Korea moved quickly to formally close the border, much of the interaction across that border is informal and hard to control. An outbreak in North Korea would be extremely dangerous because many parts of the country are impoverished and lack an adequate health care system. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
Remembrances began over the weekend for Congressman John Lewis and his lifelong legacy of fighting for civil rights. On Sunday, he was memorialized in Alabama, where his fight to end segregation 50 years ago almost killed him. It's all part of a six-day multi-city celebration of Lewis's life. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
A horse-drawn caisson carries Lewis's casket across the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma as rose petals line the way, symbolizing the bloodshed when he marched across in 1965 and was beaten by Alabama state troopers. This time, for his final trip, they stood guard.
It's poetic justice.
Congresswoman Terry Sewell also says his legacy endures.
He's laid out the blueprint for us to pick up the baton and continue his march.
Lewis's casket will now lie in repose in the Montgomery Capitol, where staunch segregationist George Wallace served 4 terms as governor while Lewis fought for civil rights. It will then head to Washington before being brought to Atlanta. I'm Julie Walker.
Lewis will lie in state at the U.S. Capitol this week before his private funeral Thursday at Atlanta's historic Ebenezer Baptist Church, which the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. once led. Protests in the American cities of Portland, Oregon, and Seattle, Washington turned violent and were declared riots over the weekend, with confrontations between demonstrators fighting for racial equality and police and federal agents. AP correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
The demonstration in Portland began with drumming and chanting. Kiara Bennett says the government has not been listening to calls for racial justice.
But now we're saying enough is enough. We want change. We want justice.
But as the night progressed, protesters marched toward the federal courthouse, shooting fireworks and eventually breaching a fence surrounding it. Federal agents responded with tear gas. Candy Finley was in the crowd.
We were about 20 feet away and they gassed us with very little provocation.
The protesters did eventually breach the fence, and in the early morning hours, authorities declared the situation a riot and began making arrests. In Seattle, city police also declared a riot, saying protesters were throwing rocks, bottles, and mortars at officers as they attempted to clear the area using flashbangs and pepper spray. At least 45 people were arrested there. I'm Ben Thomas.
Here are some of the other stories we are following at VOA. The November U.S. election is now 99 days away, and a new poll finds worrisome signs for President Donald Trump. The new figures from the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research finds 8 in 10 Americans feel the country is going in the wrong direction. The poll also finds approval for Trump's handling of the COVID-19 pandemic has fallen to a new low. Only 32% of Americans approve of his approach to the crisis. Russian President Vladimir Putin said Sunday the Russian Navy will be armed with hypersonic nuclear strike weapons and underwater nuclear drones, which the defense ministry said are in their final phase of testing. Putin, who says he does not want an arms race, has often spoken of a new generation of Russian nuclear weapons that can hit almost anywhere in the world. Australia's second most populous state, Victoria, recorded 459 cases of the new coronavirus on Sunday, the second highest daily total so far and up from 357 cases the previous day. Victoria had also reported 10 COVID-19 deaths in 24 hours, Australia's highest ever daily number. Amid rising diplomatic tensions, China has ordered the United States to close its consulate in Chengdu. Experts see the move as retaliation for the U.S. closing China's consulate in Houston, Texas, and say it reflects a new level of hostility between the two countries ahead of the U.S. presidential election in November. VOA diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports from Washington.
China swiftly retaliated against the U.S., closing the American consulate in the city of Chengdu, which covers the autonomous region of Tibet. The move came after the U.S. demanded China close its consulate in Houston. In a speech Thursday, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the Houston consulate was a hub of spying and intellectual property theft, and said 40 years of blind engagement with China had failed. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo.
The old paradigm of blind engagement with China simply won't get it done. We must not continue it, and we must not return to it.
A State Department official says China has made it clear it wants to be the first to develop a coronavirus vaccine, and that the decision to close Beijing's Houston consulate included a medical espionage component. After a number of friendly meetings between U.S. President Donald Trump and China's President Xi Jinping, experts say the consulate closures and Pompeo's speech signal a shift from civil engagement toward open hostility. Larry Diamond of Stanford University.
U.S. policy is response to really what China has been doing, which is an increasingly bullying, belligerent, and hostile posture toward its neighbors in the region and toward democratic values and interests in the world.
Other experts note the tougher tone towards China coincides with Trump's re-election campaign. Douglas Powell of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace.
I think that the speech was intended to provoke a response from China in order to intensify political feeling in the U.S. of hostility toward China, and to help rescue President Trump's election campaign before November.
With tensions over China's security crackdown on Hong Kong and its early handling of the coronavirus outbreak in Wuhan, some experts say the U.S. pushback happening now was inevitable. Clyde Prestowitz of the Economic Strategy Institute.
I think the friction was inevitable because if we were going to shift our thinking and policy about China, then clearly some of the nice chummy old things will have to be changed.
A Chinese foreign ministry spokesman announced the Chengdu closure and blamed the U.S. for the current state of U.S.-China relations. Cindy Sain, VOA News, Washington.
2 months after the arrest in a Paris suburb of Felicien Kabuga, the man suspected of financing Rwanda's 1994 genocide, officials in France have announced they've located a former spy chief suspected of playing a major role in planning the extermination of the civilian Tutsi population, which ultimately led to the deaths of more than 800,000 people. Joining us now with details is Paris-based journalist Catherine Field. Catherine, officials have not arrested this man, but opened an investigation into potential crimes against humanity. What can you tell us?
Over the weekend, French authorities announced that they had opened a preliminary investigation into one of the suspects, one of the key suspects of the Rwandan genocide. It was the former head of military intelligence. His name is Aloysio Ntahigabo. He was living in Orléans, which is about 100 miles southwest of Paris. All we know about him so far is what we've read in all the indictments and the evidence that was put forward by the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda. Now, the main allegation against this former head of military intelligence is that from 1992 until July 1994, along with 11 others, he worked out a plan with the intent of exterminating the civilian Tutsi population by drawing up lists of enemies and their accomplices. Other indictments for various others that have the documentation in the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda say that he also took part in daily meetings at which they were informed of the massacres of the civilian Tutsi population. Now, of course, he denies these charges, and he makes it very clear that he was not in Rwanda on the 6th of April when that plane did come down. But it is pretty clear when you're reading through all the documents, all the indictments by the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, that he was indeed, or is, one of the suspected architects of that Rwanda genocide.
So now that they know his whereabouts, do we know if they've actually spoken to him and if they plan an arrest, or what are you hearing about what comes next with this if he's being investigated for crimes against humanity? And it's from France, not even in the International Criminal Court?
Indeed. It was actually a news website that tracked this man down. They had been investigating him for some 7 months, trying to find out where he was living. It's anyone's guess how many suspects from the Rwanda genocide are actually living in France. Depending on who you believe, there are at least a dozen. Others say there are several dozen. But this particular website had been investigating this man. His wife had come to France in 1998, was given asylum, and was naturalized French citizen in 2005. Now, that enabled him to join her here. And in fact, they've been living in social housing that's been provided for them at reduced rate by the state.
Wow.
That is as much as we know. The Paris High Court does have special powers to try crimes that were committed outside French jurisdictions. And this is the court which may end up hearing this. It's a special court set up in 2013, which can look into crimes, serious violations of international humanitarian law, and that is crimes against humanity. So they could be brought into this. They will be keeping an eye on this case. But there was a lot of criticism that this particular court isn't working fast enough, and that this is exactly the sort of case they should have been looking into quite some time ago. But of course, all this does go back to, I think you could honestly say, that undertaking that French President Emmanuel Macron made in April 2019, that France would do all it could to ensure any genocide suspects who are living in France will be prosecuted.
And Catherine, I understand there has been at least one statement response about this from one of the groups working to seek justice
for these atrocities.
Yes, in a statement, Book of France did ask why so many suspected genociders who are on the run are living in France quite peacefully. And they do ask the question, why have so few of these people faced French justice for 26 years?
Paris-based reporter Catherine Field. The UN Sustainable Development Goals include a commitment to ending the HIV epidemic by 2030, an ambitious goal that many worry is becoming less likely now to achieve given the other pressing global health issues, particularly the COVID-19 pandemic. A new report reveals AIDS remains one of the 10 leading causes of death among adolescents globally and among the 5 leading causes of death among adolescent girls between ages 10 and 14. The report by the Elizabeth Glaser Pediatric AIDS Foundation in Lesotho, a country that, despite its population, has the second highest HIV prevalence in the world, is calling for an expansion in access to information and treatment services with a focus on young women. VOA's Jackson Vunganyi talks to Dee Moffey, a peer counselor with the foundation who tested positive for HIV at the age of 17, and talks about some of the factors driving the disparity in HIV infection rates between young men and women.
In my country, you find that young adolescent girls and young women are more likely, because you would find in the rural areas early child marriages, whereby you find that these young people are married by older men, and it's in rare cases that they negotiate protected sexual intercourse. Even in the urban areas, we have girls who cannot even afford their living, and they are into transitional or transactional intercourse with older men. So they don't negotiate safe sex. So this is why we thought it would be wise to have men's corners, whereby we'd get these men to get tested and suppress their viral load, so that at least when they go to the young girl, then we'll have this means suppressed virally. We also have an initiative called Dreams for young girls and young women, whereby they are taught to be able to stand for themselves, to be confident, to be empowered.
The world right now is, we are in the midst of a global pandemic, COVID-19 pandemic, and every resource is being deployed to fight this pandemic around the world, whether it's in Africa, whether it's here in America. Are you worried that the world will take their eye away from the ball, from fighting the fight for HIV/AIDS? As we focus on fighting this pandemic, that some of the resources that were coming to help in the fight against HIV/AIDS will be relocated somewhere else, and you know, the attention will move away from HIV/AIDS.
It's really scary because at the same time, we are scared that people aren't going to adhere well and aren't coming to the facilities as much as we thought they would. At the same time, there's the pandemic, and we had already have low stocks intakes or stocks in the
medication.
Medication, yes. So it's really scary, especially after now that we had transitioned from efavirenz to dolutegravir, DTG, which is a very new thing that we're still trying to adapt.
So you don't have, and you're worried that the stock might run out. Might run out.
Exactly.
Okay. And as one of the leading advocates for HIV positive young people around the world, who do you often direct your message to, and what do you tell them, and what do you ask for?
Well, mostly I direct my messages to policymakers and leaders, and also people who are making decisions, because they don't really involve young people in things that actually involve them. They make decisions for us as young people, then you find that we have to implement. And then when you don't implement, it's as if we are bad people or something.
Dee, I want to ask you, how do we move then from just talking, from rhetoric? And what does concrete action look like if we are to move to an AIDS-free generation?
Well, now, for instance, in Lesotho, we have young ministers being appointed. So I think we'd bridge there, we'd have young people at decision-making tables, we'd have young people being able to voice out their concerns. And then there are so many interventions that are being done, involve young people like Dreams. We have so many youth forums that are being done. So I'm really hopeful that we'll reach an AIDS-free generation. As much as there's still so much to do, because although the forums are large, are coming together, we still need more of them. We still need young people who would face all the decision makers to say, even if you don't understand what we want, but this is what we want. Because at the end of the day, it's going to be done by us. And we are actually the future generation of this country, or we are a generation of the world. And you'll be doing all these things for us to implement when you're all going to retire.
Dee Mafi, a peer counselor with the Elizabeth Glazer Pediatric AIDS Foundation, speaking with VOA's Jackson Vunganyi. You're listening to International Edition. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA's International Edition continues. Legendary television personality Regis Philbin died over the weekend. The genial host shared his life with television viewers over morning coffee for decades and helped himself and some fans to strike it rich with the game show Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Celebrities routinely stop by Philbin's syndicated morning show, but its heart and soul was in the first 15 minutes when he and co-host Kathy Lee Giffords and then Kelly Ripa bantered about the events of the day. This was he and Ripa's final show in 2011.
So it's Friday, November 18th, 2011. The final show.
How do you feel?
I feel okay. I feel pretty good.
You do?
Well, I feel, you know, a little the weight of the whole thing, you know, the somberness of it all. And where's Regis going? Regis don't know!
According to a family statement, Philbin died Friday of natural causes just over a month before his 89th birthday. Taylor Swift's latest album, Folklore, sold over 1.3 million copies internationally in the first 24 hours from launch on Friday. Released with almost no notice and little fanfare, it also shattered the global record for first-day album streams on Spotify by a female artist, with 80.6 million streams and the most streamed pop album on Apple Music in 24 hours. You heard the You've been listening to International Edition. That's it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Jackson Vunganyi, I'm Lori London in Washington. Thank you so much for listening. Have a good day. But if I just showed up at your party, would you have me? Would you want me? Would you tell me to go fuck myself? Or lead me to the garden? In the garden, would you trust me if I told you it was just a summer thing? I'm only 17, I don't know anything, but I know I miss you. Betty.
outside of the gym. I was nowhere to be found. I hate the crowds, you know that. Plus, I saw you dance with him. True.